Welcome to the PodTech.net Info Talk series here with Dan Primack, PE Wire. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much, John.
So this is a podcast, your first podcast.
It is my first podcast. It's the first time I've ever seen this setup, which is I won't say low tech. It's obviously very high tech, just much smaller than what I've seen in traditional radio and obviously TV.
Well, it's really easy to meet folks like you. We're in Boston, my hometown, and we're going to talk about a couple things. But let's talk about your big scoop you had last week with Adam Curry, sure. Pod Show. You were the first to report that Sequoia and Kleiner, or mainly Kleiner and Sequoia, were putting in $8.85 million into Pod Show or Buku Communications, basically Adam Curry's podcasting
right.
deal. Tell us a little about that, because I want to talk about how fast that just traveled around the web.
Yeah, it was surprising. I mean, I write a daily column every day, which usually breaks some sort of VC deal or leverage buyout deal or another or some personnel move. When I saw that Pod Show had raised the money, I saw it first in a SEC filing, which was very much buried. And not that Kleiner or Sequoia can technically bury it, but if they don't publicize it, these firms usually have to file something called a Form D with the SEC, which to my knowledge is the only SEC filing which the SEC itself doesn't put online. The only way to get them is to go down to the offices in D.C. and find them. And I've seen that it's in a stack in the corner. But, it was a lot of money considering that this was a podcasting company. I mean, we just talked about how there isn't much technology here, at least in terms of mass. And so $8.85 million was a lot of money. And I read that over three or four times to make sure I wasn't messing that up, to make sure it wasn't $885,000 and I was misreading it. But yeah, the minute we published that in the morning, it got more blog traffic than I think almost any other news item I've probably ever broken, which is fascinating because we've broken many that involve billions of dollars that have larger ramifications, for the economy at large or for the business world at large, public markets, private markets. But Pod Show was everywhere. I think by the time the West Coast woke up, we published 10 a.m. East Coast time. By the time it was 10 a.m. West Coast time, it was absolutely everywhere. I mean, John, you put it on a blog. Matt Marshall picked it up at siliconbeat.com, which I think is where a lot of the traffic came from. And suddenly it was
everywhere. I had it on first thing in the morning. It was actually email. I was basically woken up out of bed. Hey, because, I have podtech.net.
Sure.
And I'm doing something similar to Adam's and been quiet about it. But, oh, yeah, it's amazing how – so what you're saying is you've done reporting on billion-dollar transactions,
yeah.
billions and billions of dollars, this minuscule $8 million in this podcasting company, just like velocity – like
without,
crazy.
Which is partially because of the people you're talking – when you're talking about – particularly we're talking bloggers picking it up. And obviously – and since most bloggers who deal with technology / venture capital or some who deal with both are on the West Coast, definitely it didn't get really – people on the East Coast didn't seem to care all that much. But in the West Coast, these are folks who, if they don't have their own podcast, are regularly listening to podcasts. And it's more of a part of their daily life or at least kind of the hot new thing that they're looking at. So I think this struck a particular chord with them. But yeah, it was everywhere instantaneously.
And again,
the fact that anything that Sequoia and Kleiner invest in together, everyone suddenly sees the Google dollar signs in their eyes, so they jump up and pay attention.
What people ask me all the time, what I think of the Pod Show financing, because I'm in the business
right.
and I have a perspective, and I say to people, it's really a great business opportunity, and the fact that Kleiner and Sequoia are investing shows it. But really, the big thing that's put the exclamation point on is the fact that we're talking about how fast information travels, how you put out information as a user publisher and instantly had an audience on this thing circulating around the world was amazing.
It was amazing. I will say, I should point out, though, that I am still a skeptic when it comes to Pod Show, not Pod Show per se. I'm a skeptic that a company that focuses on podcasting can justifiably spend $8.85 million. And like I always worry when that much money goes to a Series A company that isn't, laying fiber optics across the country or doesn't have to, deal with FDA drug approval stuff. So, doesn't literally have to spend an enormous amount of money. Is my only concern ever is that they took too much. And that's not to suggest that John and Ray who I think is Mark Kwame over at Sequoia invested too much. But I would say I don't think that there's any confirmation yet or anything close that this is a good deal. It's an interesting deal. It potentially could be a trend-setting deal. I mean, you saw Odeo got funding, although they had funding also before I made
yeah.
before we broke the story of Pod Show. But it will be interesting to see what happens. If nothing else, it's a good story to watch, if not necessarily a good story yet from an economic perspective.
I think it's going to be an amazing story. I think it's going to create a lot of credibility in the ecosystem around the blog and podcasting community. And I think more importantly, it's going to awaken to people to say, okay, let's figure this out. And they're going to do their best. And I have some ideas on my end, but let's talk more about you and
sure.
the venture capital business that you cover, because you're Newswire, you report on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
What's happening in, from your view about venture capital? You've been covering it since really the downturn, and now we're on an upswing. You're in Boston, so you're in the East Coast. Mm-hmm. I'm in Silicon Valley, so we get kind of a bi-coastal kind of deal going here. Explain in your view what you see happening, East Coast, West Coast.
I'll say two things. One, East Coast, West Coast. I've become convinced that there's a technology jet stream, which start arguably maybe it starts in Japan, but it either starts in Japan or in the Valley. And it gets to the East Coast maybe 6 months later, and then it hits Western Europe probably a year after that. I was speaking with a publisher who was in London, a London-based publisher, maybe 4 months ago. We were chatting, and I brought up RSS. And he looked at me with a blank stare on his face. Now, we're talking RSS. He's a publisher. This is what he does for a living. This is and could be or should be an essential part of his business model. I'm not saying it's where all his money should come from, but it should be at least on his radar screen. And it wasn't yet. And I really think that's just because it hadn't gotten there yet. And RSS came to East Coast publishing houses before, you know, after it came to folks in Silicon Valley. So I'm not sure that completely also works with VC firms, particularly since so many have bi-coastal offices, but I think you see more healthcare firms on the West Coast than you do, I mean, on the East Coast rather than you do on the West Coast. So, and I think you see more, not necessarily more tech firms on the West Coast, but more tech firms that are dealing with quote unquote next generation, particularly internet related technologies, such as, you know, such essentially as podcasting is, or at least internet is often as a distribution tool. In terms of the VC market in general, I am seeing a remarkable upswing in internet-related technology investing. And again, as I said about Podshow, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. I think VCs are starting, at least certain VCs, are starting to once again get sucked into the pets.com mentality of, wow, we don't have to put much money into this thing. And look at the margins, or look at the prospective margins of this. Yeah, who cares? No one's ever done it before.
Well, I don't think you can compare blogs and podcasts and pets.com because, I mean,
no, pets.com had revenue.
Well, I mean, sponsorship revenue and scale. I mean, you talk about the blogosphere is growing basically fivefold every 6 months.
And
it
is.
You know, unequivocal growth.
It's growth, but it's not revenue growth necessarily. You know, you have
it's
to.
It's user growth.
It's user growth, but, you know, I think of myself as someone who, for a living, I mean, as part of my job, you know, most people go to the office, and if the first thing they did was pick up the newspaper, put their feet up, drink a cup of coffee, and start reading, their boss would come and yell at them and or fire them. I mean, that's my job. Yeah. And most of that I obviously do online. And so I read a lot of blogs, but there's just too much, even relevant material at this point for me to read. And if that's what I do for a living and there's too much, there's got to be a critical mass at some point. And you see it with a lot of blogs when there's one comment, zero comments. And not that every reader is going to comment, but I have to believe there's going to be a critical mass at some point where people just say, enough is enough. We don't need to read everybody's diary here. You know, I don't care about the person out there. You know, maybe she's got a pretty picture, so I care about that. But it's too much for me.
I agree. It's not about the diary, though. From a diary perspective, as a journal, yeah, that's
even
cool.
From a journalism perspective, there's got to come a critical mass point. I mean, how many newspapers can a person read? Then, if indeed the blogosphere is so much larger, how many blogs can you read?
Okay, I agree with you on that. So, hypothetically speaking, you saying it's complex.
Yeah.
So, if someone could make that less complex, would that be interesting to you?
I'm not sure it's necessarily complex. If they can make it smaller,
smarter,
smaller, I think smarter and smaller. I mean, that you'll see. I don't remember who this. I think it was. I think his name is Jeff Nolan of SAP Ventures. I think it was on his blog, but some blog was talking about the fact that he got so many email newsletters. Now I run an email newsletter, but get so many email newsletters, and it was his effort to kind of start sorting through them and canceling X number of subscriptions. You know, and he was like canceling a dozen a month. Well, 5 years ago, that was the big delivery tool, and everybody, us included, thought this is a good idea to do. You know, this is the great delivery tool, and we can really silo this. You know, we can have a little publication for this and a little thing, which was great in theory because you were targeting your audience. On the other hand, there came a point where it wasn't spam because you had requested it, but it served like spam. It clogged up your inbox, and there was no realistic way for you to read them all. So people picked one, two, or three, and that was it. You know, and they stopped reading the others, although usually they didn't unsubscribe.
Yeah, you can't make more time in the day.
You can't make more time in the day, and sometimes it's more difficult to unsubscribe. There's one that I've, from our competitor Dow Jones, I've wanted to unsubscribe to for a while, but when I unsubscribe to one of them, I end up unsubscribing to all of them, which I don't want to do, so it's a mess.
Yeah, so you just basically just blow it away.
Yeah, right? I just erase it. I don't read it. I don't open them. I mean, I guess theoretically, people who do email publications can see your HTML open rates, you know, so long as you're not using a spam blocking service.
Andreas Stavropoulos at Draper Fisher talks about this from a computer science perspective and saying he kind of agrees with us as well, which is, yeah, it's not there yet from a user perspective, but because it's complexity, involved, there's always innovation.
So without a doubt, it's also the old world media person in me. I'm not tied to the idea of the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and NBC being the media companies of the past, present, and future. But I am tied to the idea that there will have to be a mainstream media going forward, and that might get redefined. That might get redefined both in terms of distribution, in terms of actual actors. But there's going to have to be the value of the main, quote-unquote, mainstream media, and then there's obviously always an alternative press. But the value of the mainstream media is that it prevents you or it allows you to get the news you think you need without having to go to multiple different sources and spend your day learning about the world.
I have an opinion on this. My opinion is simply this. It comes down to consumption. I mean, basically, TV was alternative media back
sure.
when it first started.
Yep.
Okay, internet now is transforming. So I think, mainstream media, this notion that mainstream media is going to be killed by blogs and podcasting is, I think, ridiculous.
No, I think they'll be enhanced and or changed. They'll be altered.
And it's because it's a new consumption factor.
Sure.
I mean, I have guys say to me, hey, I take your podcast on the road. Psyched, man. Make it better. Can you tell me how long it is? Well, I don't do more than 15-minute segments. But, so I think there's going to be an evolution. Guys like me will kind of either roll into an established practice. Maybe we can team up or other things. I think a lot of things will shake itself out. But to say that here's the answer is too early.
No, I agree.
I mean, everyone knows the business model. It's aggregation.
Yep.
So if Adam and those guys can do it.
No, without doubt. I agree with that.
And, before other people.
First mover's always important. It's not everything, but it's important.
Let me ask you a question about venture capital and this East Coast, West Coast thing. I just saw a survey. I forget the company that does all the surveys. Massachusetts came out fourth in terms of capital.
Right, and which quarter. Was a drop.
It was a drop.
Yep.
I talked with the folks, Scott Kirstner at the Boston Globe. We had a podcast at Bucks in Silicon Valley. And I said, and being from the area, you had Route 128. It was a big influence in my life as a computer scientist.
Yep.
Mini computers, you get DEC. You get Draper Labs. You get a lot of
my
technology.
Mother worked on 128 tech companies that put food on my table while I grew up. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, important. I mean, Route 128 was huge, but it's changed. What is Massachusetts' bumper sticker? If Silicon Valley's kind of software managed services.
Biotech.
I
think Massachusetts is biotech. And it dropped in the Q2. I don't know if that's necessary. Every now and then that's partially because you had a couple huge deals in other quote-unquote unusual regions that came through in Q2. And off the top of my head, I can't remember them now, but I remember looking at it, and there was some ridiculously large deals, for example, in New York State, which is unusual. There was some very large deals.
For biotech.
For VC in general. When you look at Massachusetts dropping at overall VC levels, and you saw, I think, one really huge deal down in San Diego, and usually it's Northern California, which is larger than Southern California, but nonetheless, I think if you ask what Massachusetts is, I think Massachusetts is becoming biotech. I mean, it's clearly one of the top biotech hubs, along with San Diego, along with Research Triangle Park. But I think Massachusetts more so, partially because you have the universities, the huge universities, and the huge hospitals here. And I think that there was a recent stem cell bill which went through the legislature, passed almost unanimously. Romney vetoed it, but he got overruled. It's easy to veto something when you have no chance in hell of getting it passed.
Is Massachusetts losing its edge information technology, from a technology perspective?
I don't think so. And I think you're seeing some very, quote-unquote, hot new VC firms grow up here. The trendy ones are considered Kodiak, General Catalyst. These firms are growing up here. You got the new media one, Spark, which is just launched out in Cambridge. I mean, granted, you've also had some die. You've had Yankee Tech die. You've had a couple others which are teetering on the edge. Zero Stage has been teetering on the edge for a while. But nonetheless, I don't think Massachusetts is going away. I just think, really, we're probably tending more towards biotech, which is why I think, even though 128, you see a lot of empty real estate, you don't really see any in Cambridge. And that's kind of the biotech hub of, Massachusetts.
All right, we're approaching kind of our segment limit, but I want to ask you kind of the question everyone asks everyone else's
sure.
prediction 5 years out. From a venture capital industry perspective, what's going to change? What profound is going to change in 5 years?
I think what's profoundly going to change in 5 years is that limited partners or investors in venture capital funds in 5 years from now are going to finally see strong returns again, which means that I think the deals which are being done today, clearly not all of them, but many of the deals being done today, particularly by a lot of the younger firms, are good deals, that people have kind of learned some of their lessons from the bubble and have reconfigured. I think that's really important, because I think conversely, leveraged buyout returns, which the same people invest in, which right now are far outstripping VC returns, are going to, a lot of them, be in the toilet in 5 years. Again, looking at year 2005 investments, getting return on investment in 2010. So I think you're going to see a VC renaissance of sorts. It's funny. I'm usually very much a cynic and like to talk about bad news more than good news. In fact, I started at a conference recently by saying one of the reasons I'm not going to talk about the state of the venture capital market today is because I don't have a hell of a lot of bad stuff to say about it. I think people are doing pretty good. I mean, that doesn't mean that there's not some firms which have done monumentally stupid things.
Keith Benjamin is saying it's about the money and not everyone's making money right now.
Not everyone's making money right now, but I think – and there's certainly going to be part of a shakeout. You know, the column I wrote last Friday talked about Mayfield and some of their struggles raising cash from top-tier investors. And a limited partner said to me, he said, you know, Mayfields, et cetera, Charles River Ventures, they all got this most recent fund. They were able to skate on their name, and that's true. A lot of, quote, brand name funds were able to skate on their name in 2004 and 2005 and raising funds. They are going to have to make money in this one, though, to skate again. So if there is one
change,
it's a lot of pressure. So if there is one change, it's entirely possible that in 2010, when you think of quote brand name venture capital firms and the firms that everybody wants to get into, they're
like
going to be different.
Like what? Like what are the names?
Today's names, Kleiner, Sequoia. I think Mayfield somehow is still one of those names. On the East Coast, I think Battery is one of those names. I think Bessemer is probably one of those names. On the bio side, MPM is clearly one of those names. Frazier. And MPM is splitting essentially in half. Domain is one of those names on the biotech side. So there are those names. And I'm not saying all of those guys are going away, nor am I saying all the ones I just mentioned have skated. But I think you will see a different group of brand name firms. You know, it's possible Kodiak, General Catalyst, and Ignition, et cetera, will be considered, quote, brand name firms in 2010, the ones everyone wants money from and to give money to.
Great. Well, Daniel, thanks for the podcast.
No problem. Thanks, John.